From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and well, I actually have a surprise for you guys. For the first time since quarantine, I actually have a Bob After Dark regular co-host co-hosting the show with me from remote distance away. Via this magical technology called Zoom, we are able to actually do a show together. Everybody give a pseudo round of applause for my regular co-host, professional wrestler, paranormal enthusiast, and my best friend, Steve Michaels.
Oh, hey there, everybody. It's been a minute, but it's good to be back.
Steve, before we dive into anything paranormal or whatever it might be, please catch me up to date. What have you been doing? How's your quarantine been? We talk regularly outside of the show, but the fans haven't heard from you personally in a while. We did that virtual panel with Ghostly and Ursula back in May, but we didn't get to dive into how you're doing. That was a group effort. So this is a personal time for you to shine. Tell us what you're up to. Tell us what you're doing. How have you been and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I, like pretty much everybody else, I've been hunkered down in my house since mid-March. Just keeping healthy. Knock on wood, I'm still healthy and doing well and have avoided this virus. Haven't had a chance to work like a lot of people, unfortunately, but just glad to be here, glad to be back on the show, and it's a small sense of normalcy in all this craziness. So thanks for having me back, Bob. I appreciate it.
Of course. Now, Steve, since the last time I've had you on, we have had a surge in new listeners and new fans, and not all of them, I don't think, have listened to the backlog, so this might be their first exposure to who you are. So for the new fans at home, tell us who you are and why you're on Bob After Dark.
Well, I mean, if they don't know, they should know.
They should know.
My name is Steve Michaels. And yes, I am a professional wrestler. I wrestle across the country, mainly wrestle for Ohio Valley Wrestling. And that can be seen on national television on the U2 network.
Do you ever get tired of saying that yet?
No, do you know what? It's
I'm a national TV star, Steve Michaels.
That's a really weird thing, and it's taken a minute to kind of get used to saying you can catch me on national television, and now internationally, because they've got OVW just released a Roku and a Fire Stick app that's available in Asia and Europe. And Australia, I believe. People all over the globe can actually watch me every week, which is mind blowing. I'm not on the show just because I'm a world class professional wrestler. I also, in my spare time, am a paranormal investigator as well. I was a co-founder of a team called the Midwest Paranormal Research Society. I was a member of the tech team, which meant I did evidence analysis of audio and photographic evidence that we would, and video evidence that we would obtain and that clients would send to us as well. So I'm well-versed in my paranormal knowledge. At one point I was a member of the AGS, the American Ghost Hunting Society. that was headed up by renowned author Troy Taylor. So I mean, I've got my ghost and spooky credentials as well.
You're not just some random friend I pulled off the street with famous clout of, you can catch me on national television.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it started, but I mean, and then I was like, you know, Bob, I actually do this stuff too. And you were like, oh, really? That's great. Do I have to pay you more? To my response is, none of your checks have still cleared.
They haven't. Oh man. Just keep trying. They'll work at some point.
I mean, you keep offering me hot dogs instead. And I guess that's fine.
I'm a vegetarian though, Steve. I don't know what
that explains why you have them in surplus. You're just giving me a bunch of old hot dogs. Which let me tell you, as a wrestler, it's not the first time.
Well, joking aside, Steve, it's really cool to have you back, and I'm excited about the topic this week, but let's get down to the nitty-gritty. If this is your first time ever listening to us on podcast land, and you're enjoying what you're hearing, and maybe you've enjoyed what you heard before and you haven't done so yet, go over to the Apple Podcast section on the Apple Podcast website for Bob After Dark and leave a review. We like to read all of the reviews we get, good and bad, right here on the show weekly. And unfortunately, there is no new reviews for this week. So that gives me a chance to push this topic of, you guys need to be leaving reviews. I'd appreciate it. The more reviews we get on the show, the more exposure we get and the better overall experience it is. So if you guys haven't done so yet, make sure you jump over to the podcast, subscribe to it, make sure you're listening to it. We do come out every week. So without further ado, Steve, do you have anything to add to that of you should be leaving me reviews?
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me, I need to go leave you a review.
Do you even listen to the show when you're on it?
Yeah, I mean, I peruse every now and then, and I check in. I'm like, oh, what's this episode about? And then I'm like, ah, that's interesting. And then I fall asleep. Not because it's a boring show. I just have a tendency to listen to your shows at like 2 o'clock in the morning as I'm falling asleep. So your voice just kind of lulls me into this sense of slumber.
I'm glad to hear I have a boring voice, Steve.
Well, I mean, it's soothing, really.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's a very nice guy. This is a Steve Michaels review for Bob After Dark. If you're listening to it during the day, it'll soothe you. But if you're listening to it before bed, Bob's voice will soothe you to sleep. Soul. What was the word you used?
It will lull you to sleep.
Lull me to sleep, not Zool.
No, it's slightly different. Slightly different than Zool.
All right. Now, Steve, since the last time you were on the show, we are doing a brand new segment, a part of it, where we are taking your ghost stories, your paranormal experiences, your UFO sightings, cryptid encounters, whatever spookiness that you have, we are encouraging you guys to write in and tell us these things, and we're sharing them on the show. We had a big turnout for the first week. So, and we're only picking one per, but I promise you, if you submit it, I'm going to share it. And the last week we had A. Michaels, no relation to Steve, chimed in about a paranormal investigation he was doing up in Michigan. And this week we actually have something a little different from what the norm is on the show. I have two consecutive stories from one Tony DePratt about UFO sightings.
Ooh.
So I'm reading this word from word from right from the inbox here, and it says, hey guys, I wanted to write in my story about when my mom and I had not one but two consecutive UFO sightings. This happened when I was living at my parents' house. One week I was terribly ill after working through some longer shifts at work. I came home and immediately passed out. What I didn't know was happening was while I was passed out, my mom was letting their three dogs outside. Their home borders on a cornfield, and their backyard is fenced in by a tall fence. It was terribly frightening when the movie Signs came out. They put that in parentheses. It's kind of funny. Well, what happened next, according to my mom, was the three dogs went out onto their deck, paused, and then ran back inside crying with their tail between their legs. Thinking that there were coyotes on the other side of the fence, she walked out onto the deck and yelled, "Get out of here." What she then saw at the end of her phrase was three fire red-orange lights with no shape rise up pulsing from the other end of the fence about 30 feet away. She said they rose up until she lost sight of them in the sky. She said there was no sound and they rose straight up and did not move in any way beside going up. This was a Friday night. A week later, I was relaxing in my room and my mom screaming for me outside on the deck. I come running down not knowing what to expect, as this never happens. When I get outside onto the deck, she says, "Look at their back," and she points out to the right side of the field where resting in the sky is the same fire red color lights she described in a triangular formation. After 5 seconds of watching them, they move to the side and begin to move across the cornfield right over us. At no point was there any sound with these lights. They were 100% in formation and didn't break despite no visible connections between them. No pulsing this time, however. I couldn't make out any details of any solid state between the lights. It appeared to be nothing in between the space of the triangle shape. These lights passed right over us, couldn't have been more than 100 feet above us. They made their way towards Joliet. After they were out of my sight, my mom realized that not only wasn't another Friday, but it was about the same exact time she saw them a week prior. Freaking out, we did what only made sense and called our non-emergency phone police line. They took the call seriously, as we were another call, as they put it, in the double digits of callers reporting about the same lights. An officer came out to the house and stood in the same exact spots where we just saw the lights from. He says, and I'll never forget it, "You know, some people might laugh at this kind of a thing, but I had my own experiences." After I tell him the route it was on, he radios in that it was heading to the Joliet Regional Airport. His dispatch comes over the radio telling him to wait 10 minutes as she calls and checks for planes on the area. She radios back and states that the airport reported no pings or sighting in the area, as well as none of their planes were up in the air. They confirmed that the route it was on was not an authorized flight path and would have been too low to be safe. This was 100% unexplainable. I have never been so terrified in my life. I couldn't really explain it. The sense of seeing something so absolutely quiet but moving still was so shocking. I've shared the story with others in the past and received ridicule at times and claims of it was an RC plane or they were tea lights and bags. And he puts, not these lights. The only comfort I have in this whole story was knowing that a few others who lived in the area saw the same exact thing at the same exact time as us. We tried to stake out for the next Friday at the same time, but never saw those lights again. Thank you, Tony. It's a story. What do you think, Steve?
That's definitely interesting. That's a definitely interesting story. The fact that it was, you know, at the same time and the same kinds of lights and that's interesting. But the one thing I want to point out that's intriguing to me and that really stood out in the entire story was the fact that there was no radar knowledge of these objects.
Right.
Which is extremely common in true UFO cases. A lot of times people will see these, especially when it comes to orbs of light. There's usually no pingback with the radar waves. So that's kind of an interesting addition to that story that really kind of solidifies it as being a possible UFO.
Yeah, I it intrigues me that it was uniform pretty much the same time 2 weeks back to back. And what also intrigued me was the part of the story where Tony shares that there was no shape between the lights, as it was just three lights in formation. And the fact that they were able to move in unison definitely really like breaks the idea that they were the tea lights in bags. You know, when people send those up for well wishes and stuff, they don't fly in unison. Those things will go off on their own depending on how much air is going through one versus another. I've been involved with those types of things in the past. They don't move in unison. It's a random thing. And the fact that these three lights stuck together in formation was really strange and bizarre. And people say it might have been an RC plane, but you know, if it was an RC plane, that would have made some kind of noise, right?
Yeah, RC planes definitely make sound. I actually, down at the end of my street is a big hobby shop, and they have a tendency to fly RC planes, so I hear them all the time. They make a buzzing sound that you can hear from a decent distance. So if it's an RC plane, you would know. Plus, the lights are blinking lights. They have the colored blinking lights on them. It's not a solid color. But to go back to the tea lights thing, to play devil's advocate here, you can't entirely rule it out, since these sightings were at night, and there is a possibility that they could have been connected via fishing wire and released in unison, which means you wouldn't be able to see it at night. And depending on the cloud cover and the brightness of the moon and the stars that night, you know, even if there was a triangular outer connector of it, you wouldn't necessarily be able to see that either. So that, while that's not what it sounds like it is, it's a potential possibility for what it could have been. And I always, you know, for the newer listeners, I come from a scientific background. So what I like to do is I like to look for all the other possible solutions. And when those are clearly and thoroughly debunked, then whatever is left is what's left, whether that's paranormal or not. So that was just my kind of thinking when I heard the tea light thing initially, was that, well, there could have been some kind of thin outside harness between the three, but there's no reason really to do that unless you're actively trying to fool someone. And I mean, there really would have been no reason for anybody to be trying to fool somebody with lights at that point.
That's fair. I guess my question is, why is somebody connecting tea lights together?
And that's the thing. Like, if there was someone that was blatantly trying to fool them, that would be a plausible explanation. But I don't see a reason. There was no, I mean, obviously we only have the context that we're given. But in the context that we're given, there's no reason that anybody would have been trying to fool them into thinking that they're seeing a UFO to go through those lengths to harness tea lights together.
That's fair. Either way, whether it might have been a hoax or not, I think it's a really good story. And it just goes to show, like, anybody who's anybody can have an encounter like these. And I've, you know, this particular listener, Tony, I actually know him in real life, and he doesn't strike me as the type that would just want to come up with a story like this. You know, we talk a lot, him and I, about different things, but he's never brought up like paranormal stuff or UFO stuff. It wasn't until I brought this up and he's like, you know, man, I got a story to share. And that's the common link I think that all of us have, is it, paranormal doesn't discriminate. You know what I mean? It can happen to anybody at any time. And that's why I just find it so fascinating, especially things like a UFO sighting and just coming from him. I think that's really brilliant. You know, he's a straight shot kind of a guy. There's no reason for him just to come out and tell me this just for the, you know, the sheer glory of things. You know what I mean?
Right. And, you know, I mean, again, full disclosure, I'm a friend of his as well. But, and I don't see this being something that he'd make up. And to be quite honest, in the entirety of the times that I've known him, he's never made anything up to me, or given me any cause to disbelieve things he's said. So, you know, I mean, when you look at things holistically, and you factor in the, you know, personal feelings of somebody and interactions with someone, along with their stories and the plus the level of detail of the story. You know, I tend to believe that this was probably a real UFO that they witnessed.
I'm 100% behind you. You know, people accuse me of being a blind believer a lot, and I have to correct them and say I'm really not.
No, you've got good vision.
Excuse me?
I just said you've got really good vision.
Oh, thank you. And I full disclosure, I really don't. But as far as, you know, my beliefs are concerned, I don't automatically jump to things thinking they're real. I like to share stories, whether they're real or not. It's part of what I do for my living here on the show. Now, there are some stories that are extremely far-fetched and I couldn't believe them, but they're a good story to share. And then there are stories that I have to sit back and think about and be like, man, that's a totally plausible thing, or there's just way too much, you know, evidence here. And this is one of those stories where, you know, you're reading it, and as you're reading it, it's told so well, and you're like, wow, that makes sense. And you know what I mean? And that's just back to my thought, my whole thing about why I like talking about the paranormal is it doesn't discriminate. Anybody can have experiences. So, Tony, I really want to thank you for reaching out. And if you guys want to be like Tony and get the shout out on the show and get the shout outs on the Facebook pages, make sure you send those in. You could either DM us on the Facebook page, Bob After Dark. You could DM me on Twitter at Bob After Dark. You can email me at bob@bobafterdark.com. And I'm happy to hear your stories and whatnot. Now that Steve's back around and we have him grounded for a little bit, please, if you guys have any photos that you have of encounters or things like that, please send them in. Steve is a trained professional when it comes to looking over phenomena and photographs and video. And I've worked with him on a couple of things in the past. And Steve's really good about it. And he's not going to, you know, give you a wrong answer one way or another. He'll tell you what he thinks it is. And Steve's a great resource to have, and we're not charging you guys for the service, so feel free to send in those photos.
Yeah, and, you know, Bob, I appreciate the high praise on it. Look, that's when I was a member of the tech team for MPRS, that was my job. My job was to actively look at these photos, look at these videos, listen to these audio files, and try and essentially decipher what was there and, you know, determine whether it's dust, if it's water, if it's smoke, if there was, if it was a bug, if it was, you know, in audio, if it was potentially somebody in another room that's background sound or whatever. I mean, that was my job. I've gone through thousands of photos. I've listened to at least 100 hours of audio, definitely more than that. But I'm always happy to take a look. You know, if you're looking for someone that's going to tell you that no matter what, that what you've got is a ghost, I'm not that person. I'm going to tell you honestly, through scientific analysis, what I believe your photo is. So feel free to send them in if you've got something that you're curious about, that you want us, you know, that's been kind of bugging you, like, hey, I don't know what this is. If you're on the fence, send it in. We'll take a look.
Absolutely, especially with orb photos. Those are the easiest things in the world to catch, in my opinion, and as far as my investigations. I discredit orbs more than I probably discredit anything because it's so easy to capture an orb.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you have them, I'd love to see one, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, since we mentioned it, I know it's not the topic, but since we mentioned it, I might as well explain at least what my personal criteria is from my time with the AGS.
Sure, hit us.
So it has to be perfectly circular. If it's any kind of other geometric shape, it's definitely dust or dirt or water. It has to be completely solid, meaning that you can't see through it. If you can see through it, it's most likely water. It has to have a center to it. So when you look at it, there's almost like a nucleus to the orb. And most importantly, it has to be appearing to emit its own light. So it can't, you know, when it's the ones that are see-through, that are, that's water, that's the water or whatever reflecting the light. But if it's solid and you can't see through it and it's bright, that's something that's potentially a real phenomenon. And those are the ones that really kind of intrigue me, because I've got photos that I've taken myself of that and I've seen them. And it's a night and day difference between the two.
But either way, folks, if you have those photos, feel free to send them in. If you have stories, feel free to send them in. We'd love to share them on the show. This show is about you guys as it is about me or Steve sharing experiences with you guys. So I want to make you guys the stars. I'm not at cons right now, guys. There's no cons going on. I'm not there to answer your questions with you when I'm doing my panels, and I'm not there to hear your stories. As much as I'd love to, it's what I was doing for work when there was nothing going on, you know? But now, unfortunately, there's COVID and I can't be there. So I still want to hear your stories. This doesn't stop me. So make sure you reach out to me virtually. And if you have something you know, you're going through and you're desperately looking for metaphysical help, reach out still. I'm there for you. Well, let's move on to the next part of the show. This is the weird, spooky news articles of the week. This is where you guys, the fans, and me track down weird articles in the world. Anything from popular ghost sightings to really weird news about potential, you know, Loch Ness monster photos surfacing, no pun intended, or weird advances in science that are borderline science fiction. Those are my absolute favorites when I get to share those. They have never any other place on my show except the news. So you guys, the fans, usually send these in. This week I got a couple different stories I want to share. I doubt Steve has any stories he wants to share because he never comes prepared.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know we were still doing this gimmick. So
when you reached out to want to be on this episode, I said, "Hey buddy, do you remember the news article thing?" And you're like, "Oh yeah, maybe I'll come prepared." Did you come prepared?
I thought that was a joke. I thought we had like given up on this.
No, it's my favorite part of the show.
Okay. I mean, your show, bro.
You didn't come prepared.
No, I mean, you know, hey, some things never change, brother.
That's fair. In that case, we're going to get to hashtag Steve's take on my news articles. So my first story comes to us from Russia.
You could edit that pause out. I was actually in the middle of taking a drink of water.
No, you're fine. I'm actually going to keep that in too. I'm not going to edit that out.
I thought you were.
This first news story comes to us from Russia.
Clicking on all cylinders tonight, Bob.
So a couple from Istanka, a small village located 12 kilometers outside of St. Petersburg, Russia, have built a concrete replica of the Great Pyramid of Giza right in their own backyard. Measuring 9 meters above ground and 9 meters deep and consisting of 400 tons of concrete blocks, the Pyramid of Istanka is 19 times smaller than the structure that inspired it, the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt. But according to the owners, Andriy Vekrushkiv and his wife, Victoria, apparent from the size differences, the two imposing structured are actually quite similar. The couple claim that attention to detail was crucial for this project, adding that they spent years studying the design of the Pyramid of Cheops and visited many times just to get everything right. I was actually striving to achieve exact sizes up to the 1 centimeter accuracy on the right level, not with 1 or 2 meter centimeter error, but the exact perfect and nothing less, said Andrew. He said, of course, the blocks we used are different, but this is still a monolithic structure. We know we made careful calculations in terms of masonry, making it in a special way so that it was close to the original as possible. After calculating the exact size of the pyramid, Andrea and Victoria spent a month looking for a construction crew who was willing to build it according to their specifications. I just want to pause real quick and say I'm surprised it only took them a month to find them. Many flat out refused, which doesn't surprise me, but they finally found a contractor who had actually thought the project was cool. It's not clear how long the construction lasted, but the pyramid first started making headlines in Russia back in March. And there's different news articles. This is coming from Oddity Central, by the way. And they're saying that the they're trying to rent it out as like an Airbnb. And they're saying it would be, they're saying from a metaphysical standpoint that staying the night inside the pyramid has certain, you know, healing and protective powers. And to stay a night inside, it'll cost you anywhere between 3,500 to 10,000 rubles or rubies a night to stay in it. Rubles, by the way, are the Russian currency that they are used to. And are you interested in hearing the conversion on that, Steve?
Yeah, sure. What the heck?
So it'd be between $50 and $140 to stay the night in this pyramid in Russia.
That's about like what? That's 3,500 to 10,000, right?
Yeah, 3,500 to 10,000 rubles, or $50 American, 140, depending on the night you're staying. If you're staying on like a witching holiday or something like that, a Sabbath, you're obviously going to probably pay closer to the 140. But on a random Tuesday, you're just going through St. Petersburg and you're like, I'm going to go stay at the Tower of, you know, the Pyramid of Giza. You probably want to pay that 50. I'm assuming. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I just found a couple photos online of this thing, and it's
Hashtag Steve's take.
Yeah Hashtag my take. It's actually pretty impressive. I mean, obviously there's design changes that they were forced to make in the scale down, and I'd love to see what the interior of it looks like, but it's definitely pretty neat, I gotta say.
And the fact that they're billing it as a metaphysical thing versus just a, we were bored and built a pyramid, really was interesting. I don't know which thing I prefer more. Do I prefer the actual, like, we were bored during COVID and built a pyramid reasoning, or, you know, we're practitioners of the occult world, so we decided to build some sort of occulty Airbnb. I don't know which explanation I like more, but I really, really like the idea that it's I could go and stay there during a Sabbath and the pyramid's powers are going to protect me. That's kind of cool.
You know, Bob, I mean, this, honestly, this begs a really good question.
Yeah. Hit me.
If you had all the money in the world, what would the one thing you could build during COVID be?
A 1-1 replica of the Mothman statue in Point Pleasant. That's up there. I guess a scaled replica that would fit in my backyard of Big Ben. That'd be one.
Your neighbors would hate that.
Yes, that would be the point. a 1-1 tiki statue would be kind of cool, I guess.
Like the Easter Island statues?
Yes, the Easter Island tiki statues, yes. The heads.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. A 1-1 cement replica of me and you wrestling a basilisk.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
that.
Yeah, no, I dig it. Those are all good answers.
All right, how about you?
Oh, you know, I would, I think it would be fun to, like, I don't know, like, maybe build, like, a replica of Stonehenge, but not like, in a weird, like, Spinal Tap way, where it's, like, super small.
Like, I appreciate that reference.
Like, an actual, like, scale Stonehenge would be kind of neat. Call it Stevehenge or something. I don't know.
Welcome to Stevehenge.
Yeah. It's a nickel to come in.
It's only a nickel. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, you got to keep the prices down in this economy.
Full disclosure, Steve, I would pay you $1 to walk through Stevehenge.
Well, I mean, I like that. I mean, that's...
Gimmick aside, I think you should probably do that because you have a tourist thing there. In new to the burbs of Chicago comes the Stevehenge, the metaphysical occulty statue replica of the modern age.
I just need to find a town that's willing to, like, give me subsidies for building a tourist attraction in their town.
You know, Steve, you and I have come up with crazier plans. This would probably be one that actually works.
This is, yeah, I mean, we've come up with some winners, but I think this one, in theory, would probably actually, like, get people to show up. We just need a field, a lot of rocks, and
a construction crew that is aware of how to position it properly.
Yeah, can you imagine you and I as the foreman at this job? With hard hats on, just yelling at people, telling them, no, cantilever. And they're like, what are you talking about?
All right. So real quick before we move on.
It's going to be a long episode, Bob. I can already sense it.
Will you be staying at the pyramid of the pyramid of St. Petersburg? If you're in Russia, obviously. I'm assuming you're not taking a trip to Russia just to stay the night.
Yeah, I mean, you're not the boss of me. But I don't know. I mean, there's so many other things I would like to see in Russia. So I would say no.
If I'm in Russia and I'm outside of St. Petersburg and I'm looking for just a place to stay the night, it's worth the $50. I'll pay the $50 to stay the night.
Yeah, I'd want to see what the interior looks like.
That's fair. All right, let's move on to the next news story, which is an update on a story that we talked about a little bit ago on the show. This was a while back, of a man who had the haunted doll that was cursing at him in EVPs. Well, this guy now has a collection of haunted dolls. His name is Chad Gassert. And he has a collection of what he claims are, you know, more haunted dolls. And apparently, he was at home in Ohio at the time and had recorded his little doll cabinet that he has of the haunted dolls. And apparently, they started moving on their own. And they said that viewers say in the video, because this is all video done when he wasn't around, say they could see a pair of eyes behind the dolls as they move. And one advised him to leave the house immediately after he shot the footage online. So apparently this guy now has a collection of them. And they're now giving him really scary warnings in the middle of the night that he should probably leave the home. And that they're very angry that they're cooped up into the glass.
Yeah, I mean...
Hashtag Steve's take.
I mean, he was foolish just to start collecting them in the first place. So... like, I mean, whatever he gets, he knew what he was doing.
that's the Steve answer.
Yeah. I mean, that's not even like a gimmicked answer. That's like the true Steve answer. Like if he gets possessed, like he knew what he was getting into collecting haunted dolls. When was the last time you heard of anything positive come about from a haunted doll?
Absolutely nothing. That's my biggest fear in the world. You know this.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you're like, oh, hey, let me just collect like 15 haunted dolls, you're an idiot.
Jeez. Other than given the people that are fascinated by them and they have, you know, the stories to share, I'd say the common average person probably shouldn't be collecting haunted dolls. But if you're a paranormal enthusiast and you like do that, because I have met people at cons and stuff that, that are, you know, witches or spiritualists, whatever, that collect them, all the more power to you if you know what you're doing. But for the average, you know, dude, you probably shouldn't be doing that, which I think he's just an average dude who had one and now he wants to diversify his collection a little bit. But now they're giving him, like, you know, warnings to get out of the house. That's definitely been on the scary side.
Yeah, it's messed up, man. Like,
all right, let's take a quick little break before we dive into the lore of the week. I'm going to share with you guys some words from a fellow podcast that you should be listening to. Stick around.
Hey, true believers and new believers, this is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
Oh, hey there, Bob. That was a good solid bump we did.
Yeah, what did you do during break?
I texted. Check some emails.
You know, I hear your favorite cartoon strip artist is back working.
Yeah, Gary Larson, man.
I heard Gary Larson's doing his show, his thing again.
He like out of nowhere, he came out with four brand new Far Side comics.
Yeah, and Far Side's been gone for a while, so surprised you weren't catching up on his stuff during the break.
Yeah, I was. I had to call my bookie. which, you know, most people think they're not working because there's no sports, but you just need to know where to find the sports.
All right. So let's dive right into the lore of the week. Now, I want to point out that when I came up with the topic of this discussion, whenever I come up with a topic for the show, I usually think weeks in advance. I'm like, okay, I want to do this, this, and this leading up to the time. There was other times where something might just like randomly come up. Like when rest your soul, when Lorraine Warren died, I had to put out a Lorraine Warren episode when I was straight on the radio. So, I mean, there's times when they're really planned and they're really not, depending on what's going on. This one has been building up and building up and building up for a while. And that is because it's summertime and none of us are going on vacation. And I've been in a desperate want and a desperate need to go to one of these said places that we're talking about today. So this is the official Bob After Dark Staycation Spooktacular. What do you think? What do you think about that, Steve? You like that? You like that name?
It's a good name.
Thank you. And for the staycation, I want to talk a little bit about the Disney parks, both land and world. And how do they fit into the Bob After Dark world, other than the fill in the future blank here about when Steve chimes in talking about the story of the Haunted Mansion and claims it to be real, which I think you did before on the show. You called in and told us that story, which I find really funny.
Yeah, I've done a lot of things on this show.
You know, I was thinking about it. I'm like, you know, I've been watching a lot of Defunct Land on YouTube and I've been just seeing these things. And I said, are there ghost stories or something paranormal going on with Disney? And so over the past week, I've been thinking about Disney and I'm like, I want to do this. And so I gathered up enough research and I was like, man, I could totally do an episode about the Disney parks and it being haunted. In fact, I could do two episodes on the Disney parks. There's just so much information. So this week, let's dive right into the question of, are the Disney parks haunted? And there are three basic parts to why it could be haunted. One, there are deaths reported at both Disney parks and the resorts following. That's a fact. You can go look those up. Second, are the fact that people like to leave the remains of their loved ones at the parks, specifically the Haunted Mansion It's a Small World and Pirates of the Caribbean. All three rides are infamous for people taking their loved ones' remains, their ashes, and spreading them around inside the ride or dumping them into the water. And then the third is just the idea that all these people gathered these parks, and for the most part, I'd say 99.99% of the time, they're having a really good experience. And these good experiences are leaving such an impact of energy behind. And I would argue to say that there's probably not, as far as pop culture is concerned, not a more iconic spot in America, and I'd argue in the world, than Disneyland and World.
Oh, is that me?
Chime in, yeah.
Yeah. You know, as a person, I love Disney World and Disneyland, and you know, I'm an annual pass holder. I go there all the time. I think there's something to be said about the fact that it's such a wholesome, happy place. I think on a deep level, people want to find something scary about it. You know? You're hard pressed to find too many people at Disney that are angry or sad or upset, you know? But I think it's that wholesome kind of attitude that's really been a breeding ground for these kinds of stories and reports, I guess.
Yeah. And before we start, I just have two quick fun facts for you guys. Pat's not on this episode, but I'll still call him hashtag Pat Facts. Steve, do you know what year Disneyland was open?
Disneyland was
1955.
77 was Disney World, sorry.
65 was Disney World.
We can edit that out, right?
No, we're going to leave that in. I can edit that out. So 1965 would have been World and 1955 for Land, which surprised me because I always thought World came first.
Yeah. Well, Disneyland was built on orange groves in Anaheim as Walt's kind of personal passion project. I mean, I don't want to get too into the actual history of the parks and the lands, but once Disneyland actually started to succeed, Walt's ultimate goal was to build a much larger park. And that's where he came up with the Florida Project, which then became the Walt Disney World Resort, just outside of Kissimmee and Lake Buena Vista. And so he's where it's exponentially larger. It's four parks, two water parks, dozens of hotel resorts, and their own downtown area, downtown shopping district, as opposed to the small footprint of Disneyland, which is two theme parks within walking distance of each other, and three hotels, and a shopping district that's about a third of the size of Disney World's.
Can you guys guess why Steve wanted to be on this episode?
Hey, look, and I just want to say, if I didn't call you out on the fact that I wasn't asked yet, this episode probably wouldn't be happening with my participation, and I would have been real grumpy.
That's fair. I didn't think to ask. I'm going to be completely honest. I started coming up with the idea, and then I put out the teaser image of the Mickey Mouse ears, and Steve's like, Bob, if I'm not on this episode, and I said, well, I'm not in the studio, how am I going to make this work? And then luckily, thanks to Pat from Ghostly, I was able to set up a Zoom call with Steve where we could record separately, and I can get the audio edited, and that way there we're not together. We're not breaking social distancing rules. So
he saved a business relationship and a friendship.
So Steve, without saying, you're a Disney fanatic, yes?
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah.
What's just off the record real fast? We'll derail for a quick moment. What's your favorite Disney film of all time?
A Disney film? It's Tron.
Oh, that's a good pick. Mine would be Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
That's a really good one.
Yeah, that's
I'm one a of big fan of Jessica Rabbit, by the way, Bob.
All right, so is the Disney parks haunted, or are they haunted? You know, is it possible? And there are three different story aspects to what you look up and find. One are the real hokey ghost stories of the Disney parks. These are like borderline, and even some of them are creepypasta level stories. I don't know if you're a fan of Defunct Land, Steve, but it's the YouTube show where they talk about, like, you know, weird bits of Disney past that abandonment things. It's really cool, really interesting stuff. The they talk about the abandoned parks, but if you and then like the projects that they abandoned, but if you look up those abandoned parks on Google and see if they're haunted, man, the stories that come up. I've read stories about like the random islands that were used at one point that are now just sitting floating on the water doing nothing. I read a story about a guy that took a canoe out there and was chased around by a haunted animatronic Mickey that almost killed him. There are some real bad haunted photos from Disney. Those are the, like, the straight, like, wire, you know, that you're just banking off the thing there to make it popular, right? And that's fine. I don't dog on anybody for their creepypasta writing abilities. I like them. But there are some really ones that you look at it and you say, no, there's no possible way. Is it making for an entertaining story? Absolutely. And is there a creepy factor knowing that there's a large sums of the Disney World project, especially in Florida, what I'm referring to in world, is there are lots of places on that property that are abandoned. And they do make for a good story, but that doesn't make it true. It's just relatively, you know, spooky. But there are pictures. And especially there's one video, and I don't know if you've ever seen this, of the maintenance video of the night security watch of the after blurred image of a figure walking from one point of the service area to the next. Have you ever seen that video, Steve, at Disney World?
No, I'm not familiar. I'm familiar with the alleged footage from the Haunted Mansion, but I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, so this is probably, I know about the Haunted Mansion footage, and we're going to get to that. But this one is probably the most famous haunted video out of Disney. And people are like, why, what is this video? Well, there's actual, like, technical backing to it, and that is the, it was actually a taped over video from the day before, and the after image from the people being on the tape footage from the night before, and you're looking at the same exact footage from the next, like same image, but with footage kind of running on the magnetic tape in the background, kind of shows like a little after blur of what the VHS tape had before. So no, it wasn't actually a haunting. It was just an image. There's also other ones of a supposed figure that walks around the upper floor of the Haunted Mansion, especially in one of the windows. You supposedly look up and see randomly a figure of a woman standing there. And unfortunately, that is a part of the ride. That's a part of the gimmick. The idea was that this woman was actually supposed to be grabbed back by one of the ghosts in the Haunted Mansion. It was supposed to help kind of drive the story of the ride along a little bit, but they never actually built the thing to actually pull her back. But she still stands there, and occasionally they'll drop the lights on and you can still see her. It's just a little Easter egg. There's not an actual ghost, at least part of that. Then there's also the haunted sightings of the Tower of Terror in the Hollywood land, MGM Studios. That's the word I was thinking of.
Hollywood Studios.
It's not called MGM anymore, is it?
No, it is not.
Okay. But
they lost the legal licensing to it a few years back, and they're just like, Hollywood Studios.
Okay, so Hollywood Studios and the Tower of Terror ride. Supposedly people have seen ghosts of previous writers, and on like screens as they're falling, and it's like a reflection of writer's past. And again, unfortunately, that's just a technical thing. They do randomize the images shown during the ride when you're falling down in the elevator. So that's that just happens to be one of those things. So there are technical things about the Disney parks that are spooky, that that's intended to be. And I think they're really fun, but there's actual ghost sightings at Disney that aren't explainable by the technology, and they're not 100% supposed to be there. You know, there's not, Steve's on the show, so I have to play the skeptic card a little bit better this time. So, I mean, there's no, it's allegations, but there's not a logical explanation. It's not the park doing this. It's not, you know, a publicity thing. This is like legit. Oh, wow. This is actually kind of scary. And you got a couple stories, Steve. I got a couple stories, correct?
That is correct. I've got research tonight.
I'm really proud of you, and you did more than just a Wikipedia search, right?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for calling me out on that, you jerk.
It's fine. I'm just picking on you a little bit.
I mean, I've seen your show notes too, and there's quite a bit of overlap there, Bob. So it's weird. Sometimes it's almost word for word. It's
we're picking at each other a little bit here, folks.
But in all seriousness, yeah, I did. I've gone through some of the old back channel forums, old back channel Disney forums, and found some older posts. I've talked to a couple current and former cast members off the record. You know, just to kind of get a feeling of, because look, I mean, there's certain stories that are well known, but the reality is a lot of the stuff, it comes from lesser known sources, because pretty much every cast member has heard at least one story. But due to Disney being the happiest place on earth, and it's all, you know, it's all sunshine and rainbows, they can't really be publicly talking about hauntings and creepy goings on at the park. So I've done my research.
I'm really excited to hear what you got. I'll start it off and then we'll go back and forth, because okay, my first story is probably the most important figure that would haunt the park, and this would make the most sense.
Mickey Mouse?
No, well, I'm close. Walt Disney himself.
I mean, he's as big as Mickey Mouse.
I would argue that he's, never mind. So the particular spot that Walt supposedly haunts is the Main Street Fire Station in Disneyland. If you guys don't know, in Disneyland, Walt actually had a little apartment that was built above the fire station. And this was his place where he'd go and stay the night when he was working long hours at the park, or he needed to get away and get some sleep, whatever it might be. That apartment was there. He'd also, if like a big name celebrity, or let's say the President of the United States was coming to the park with his family would be invited to come stay in Walt's apartment that was built above the fire station. And specifically, part of the story, and this is relevant to the ghost story, is in the main window above the firehouse, there is a little candle lantern that Walt would have on when he was there. And he would light the lamp in the fire station to let people know that he was there. So according to legend, after Walt Disney's death, a cleaning woman was cleaning the apartment and noticed that the lamp was lit. She turned it off and left, only to see it was lit again in the window when she got outside. She then did what anybody would do in this situation, and she went back to the apartment and turned the lamp back off. When she came back outside, the lamp was still again, well, it was lit again. She went back again and turned it off, only this time she stuck around. She didn't actually leave. And the lamp turned itself back on right in front of her. Nobody ever tried to turn the lamp off since. It just to this day, they just leave it on, and it's supposed to be a symbol of like positivity and his love for the building of the parks. And they just don't mess with the lamp anymore. It's as if Walt's just like, I'm here now permanently. And to this day, cast members report footsteps and knocking coming from the fire station apartment, especially at night. And I just want to give a quick shout out to the Wander Wisdom Travel Destinations blog for helping me out with that story.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good story, and it's so the history behind that firehouse was obviously Walt died relatively shortly after Disneyland was completed, and that was built as his apartment. And that was his sign while he was in the apartment that he was there, is that light would always, he would always turn that light on. And that's how the cast members at the time would know that, hey, Walt's in the park. It was kind of a beacon of hope. Yeah, the story of that cast member is probably the most famous story out there regarding hauntings at any Disney park.
Yes. So. And I would argue that it makes perfect sense for somebody like that to come back and haunt the place. I mean, what is a haunting at the end of the day? We talk about this a lot, and I always have to reiterate because it's very important. There's different kinds of hauntings, and it would make sense that if there was a residual haunt, meaning that it's just kind of a time looping thing, that it might have been Walt himself still sticking around and just making sure that he's making his rounds. And he put a lot of his own energy into the place, and it's possible that some of that still stuck around. Now, whether or not there's a straight up intelligent haunting of Walt Disney hanging out there, and he was really angry with that cleaning woman and didn't want her to turn that off, and he just kept it on, I mean, I don't really know. But the idea that it could be a potential residual haunting of Walt makes perfect sense, and I don't doubt it. If there's anybody to haunt it, other than maybe a couple of the people that died at the park, I would say that Walt would make the most sense for people to be there haunting it, you know?
Yeah, and it's the most plausible out of all the stories we're going to say today, this is probably the most plausible in my personal opinion. Because Walt had such a deep investment into Disneyland. It truly was his pride and joy. And he spent so much time in the parks during construction. He spent so much time there once it was open. He put so much energy and emotion into it. And in the time in that apartment, it makes perfect sense that if Walt ever returned someplace as a ghost, that would be the place he would return to.
Excellent. All right, Steve, let's hear your first story.
Okay, so I've got a couple different stories here. So I'm gonna start out with an equally famous haunting, and this one takes place in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Walt Disney World. So allegedly the ride is haunted by a ghost named George. He was supposedly a welder that worked on the construction of Pirates. And he was killed in an accident during construction. There's conflicting reports as to what happened. Some say that he was killed by a falling beam. Some say he fell off of the top of one of the buildings in the burning village scene near the end of the ride. But he's become so ingrained in the ride that and to the legend and lore of the ride that the cast members regularly, it's kind of tradition for them to say goodnight or good morning to George during ride openings and closings as they're turning the lights off or coming into the building. And legend says that if you say the phrase, "I don't believe in George," while on the ride, he will shut the ride down.
Oh, no.
So this story's interesting for a couple reasons. There's no real origin for this story. It just kind of started one day, but it's been perpetuated over time, and has become a big part of Disney lore. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find any diehard Disney fan or Disney Parks fan that doesn't know about George, or at some point hasn't at least heard of George. There's just a couple problems. The biggest one being that there was never any proof that George ever existed. There's no records of any workplace accidents that resulted in death during construction of Pirates, especially none that were related to somebody falling, or more importantly, a beam falling on them, which kind of leads to the secondary point, which is the legend that it's, you know, if you say "I don't believe in George," that it will shut the ride down. Most Disney World fans and fans of Pirates in general will be the first to tell you that Pirates of the Caribbean is the most prone ride to break down in the parks. Due to the complexity of the ride, it being a water ride, and the multiple animatronics, and the ride systems throughout the ride, that ride breaks down at least once a day. And it's just the very nature of it. So I think, you know, looking at it in a holistic view, I think it's a great legend that kind of resolves two things. One, it's a dark ride that's kind of spooky. You know, there's a bunch of animatronic pirates, and there's, you know, smoke and water and all this stuff. And the cast members aren't smiling and happy in there. They're always kind of gruff. And then it also leads to the fact of, you know, "Oh, hey, why is the ride broken down? Oh, it must be George." Now, that being said, the Disneyland version of the ride, in theory, should be more likely to be haunted than the Disney World ride, on the simple fact that during the construction of the ride, the second show scene that you travel through, the scene right after you go through the swamps, is a giant cave that is filled with pirate skeletons and treasure. And originally, Disneyland's Imagineers went to UCLA and bought a ton of real human bones.
Yes.
To decorate the interior of the ride. So when you were riding past and floating past all these skeletons and skulls just sitting on piles of treasure, and they were real skulls. They were real bones.
Yes, the idea was that the Imagineers back then, they fake skeletons were too hokey, and they wanted realism, so they went to the source.
They exactly did. It was because they hadn't mastered making, they hadn't mastered entirely photorealism with the animatronics, which you can see in some of the older animatronics that they used. And they couldn't fully recreate these bones to look real enough. So they figured, okay, we'll just buy them. And so they did. Yeah. There were dozens and dozens of bones in this ride that were real. Now, if you go to Disneyland and go ride Pirates today, all of those bones have been replaced except for one. And it's the skull that's built into the headboard of the bed in that scene. All the rest of the bones have been replaced and are resin fiberglass, but there's still one original bone, and it's one skull. So in reality, that pirate should, if either one was haunted, it should be the Disneyland version. But ironically, there's never actually been any reports of hauntings at the Disneyland Pirates of the Caribbean ride. So I go figure that one.
I will say that that's a really good story with the George thing. And I think that's a perfect example of a ghost story over time evolving into the lore itself, as you were saying, because clearly there was no evidence of a George actually existing. And I read an article during all of this that said that there were two workers who died during the construction of Disney, neither one of them being named George and neither one of them working on Pirates.
Exactly.
So it's an interesting thing where it developed a culture all in and of itself. And I really appreciate that. It's a good story. Now, whether or not there is an actual George ghost kicking around, I think you're looking at more of, if there is a haunting, I think that's a reality turn something as a tulpa. It's one, you know, we think about it long enough, so we start believing it exists. And the curse of the Pirates ride always going down. I mean, that, you know, it's a good way to blame it on something. And it's, I think it's even cooler, like, to be like, oh, it's the ghost of George, to tell people that are angrily waiting in line for hours on end for Pirates.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think it's to that note, some of the cast members, they can tell who's a regular, you know, Disney person. Like if you go to the parks all the time, they can tell. So every now and then I've been told, like, when I've gone up and asked, like, is Pirates down again? They're like, yeah, it's George. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. I'll check back.
Well, cast member has actually told you before that it was George.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been told that a couple times just because they get it. Everybody that works at the park is a Disney fan. And if they work at Pirates, they've heard the joke too. And they've heard the story. So, you know, it's kind of like it's George, check back in an hour. Okay, cool. But I think equally important, like you kind of mentioned, is it's a great way to, it's a fantastic example of how an urban legend builds over time. You know, it shows how it started kind of one day as a joke, and then it just kind of built to this thing where you'll just hear, like, you know, I've heard random people in line talking about, you know, make mention of George, or, you know, say hi to George or whatever. Like it's been built in. It's pretty amazing.
All right. My second story is a little bit of trivia before we start. Steve,
yes, sir.
What is the scariest ride at Disney?
Space Mountain.
No. What causes the most anxiety while riding it?
Which part? Are we talking Disneyland, Disney World?
It's Disney parks. What causes the most anxiety riding?
Tower of Terror?
No. It's a Small World. There have been more reported cases of anxiety attacks during the ride and with It's a Small World than it's been with any other ride.
Really?
Yeah. and people can't explain it. It's bizarre. They think there's something with the beat of the song that continuously plays, that it just kind of like draws on a person after a while and you start feeling it. But I've read stories on those like back forums of people just like having full blown meltdowns going through that ride, and they have to like get out and go get some medical attention because they couldn't handle it. And full thing here, if you've never been on It's a Small World, it is the calmest ride in the entire universe. There's nothing to it. It's a little gondola that rides you through Singing Dolls, which that part is horrifying. But that's where the second ghost story comes in from Disney, which really surprised me, is the fact that apparently the It's a Small World dolls are actually said to move around by themselves at night, and they are supposedly haunted by cast members past who worked on the ride, loved the ride, loved working that ride day in and day out for their livings. And when they passed on, they just didn't want to leave. So they picked out their favorite doll, which apparently cast members named them, and they stick with them after death.
I don't know, man. Like, I've ridden that ride a lot. I've been stuck on that ride. Why anybody after they die would want to return there is kind of beyond me.
Did the song keep playing when you were stuck on it?
Oh yeah, no, it just keeps going and droning on and on, and then you know you're stuck in this boat with you know five other families, and it's and those kids are getting sick of it, and it becomes like a real life horror show, man. It really does. Because you just get this happy song going in the background. Families are having meltdowns. The dad's like, I didn't want to ride this ride anyway. I'm just sitting there on my phone texting like, oh my gosh, I just want to get off. So
I
clearly have a lot of stuff to work through in relation to It's a Small World.
Do I believe that the dolls are moving on their own? I don't know. I couldn't find much more other than cast members saying at night they move. I didn't see any videos or photos. I'm going to call this one completely defunct, but it's still an interesting story, and it makes sense with the anxiety-ridden ride that It's a Small World produces. Also, fun fact, when I was in Disney World last year, the cast member says, you know, don't put your hands in the water. And I was like, why? The gondola gears are way up underneath that boat. And so I asked, and they're like, oh, it's for your safety. I'm like, I get that, and I don't want to be that guy. But I'm like, why? And she's kind of gets really quiet with me, and she's like, I'm not trying to scare you. She's like, I'm just being completely honest. She's like, when you put your hand in the water, there is a big possibility you are sticking your hand in, you know, Uncle Fred's ashes. I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah, that's, I'm not joking. She's like, people dump ashes in this ride, and she told me Pirates and Haunted Mansion all the time. And she said, so when you put your hands in the water, you might be touching somebody. And I'm like, that's disgusting.
Well, on top of that, and the real more direct reason, I mean, that's definitely a reason, but the actual official reason that Disney doesn't want you putting your hands in the water in that ride or Pirates, is because if you actually look at the water is filled with oil and grease from the gears. And anyone that actually falls into the water is required to get a tetanus shot afterwards. Just because of all the gunk and the dirt and the rust and the grime that's actually underneath the water surface.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. Didn't tell me that part. She just told me that I'd be sticking my hand in somebody's remains. And I learned my lesson real quick.
Well, to build on your It's a Small World thing, there was a report and there was an alleged photo that's floating around the internet. I'm sure you came across it.
Yes.
Of somebody that claims that someone hung themselves in the rafters of It's a Small World.
Yes.
And in this photo, it's what appears to be a body of some type hanging from the rafters. And they're claiming that this was a real person. If you actually study the photo, or you're an insane Disney fan like myself, you can quickly tell that that's just one of the Small World dolls. That just was up there for some reason. And why it was hanging, I have no clue. And someone probably got fired for it. But that's what that's all that was. So it wasn't like there's been no reports of anybody actually like hanging in there for the record. Because that would require backstage access and all that. Although, fun Disney fact, and you can just shut me up at any time, Bob.
It's okay. We'll get this one. We got to move on.
Okay. Fun Disney fact. Did you know that It's a Small World is the only ride in the park without interior ride cameras?
No.
It is. It's the only ride that once you're inside the ride, there's no cameras in the actual show building.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. Good to know.
Yep.
So
what you will.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So the last bit I'm just going to add to that is, do I think that cast members are possessing dolls? Maybe. Do I think that probably has something more to do with people dumping remains in there? Probably more so. Reality is I don't buy into it. I mean, it's possible, but it's not something. Let's move on to your story, Steve.
Yes. So my next story is actually it's another very famous attraction, and it is the Haunted Mansion.
My favorite attraction.
It's my favorite too. The Haunted Mansion at Walt Disney World. And there's two different reports. One is supposedly there is a little boy that haunts the ride. And unlike, you know, other types of children hauntings, he's allegedly is seen riding the ride and laughing and giggling. And there's a alleged photo of this ghost peeking out from around the corner of one of the doom buggies, which is what the ride vehicle is called, in which you see this head of this kid leaning out of the ride vehicle as a person who's used to studying photos, that it's a dubious photo at best. It looks like it's just some regular kid just leaning out of the ride, which is what that most likely is. But then there's a report of an old man that is seen in like the queue area with a cane, and you can try to talk to him, but he won't interact with you. And then when you try and get close to him, he'll just turn and walk and disappear. Both of these, I have found no hard evidence that these have actually occurred. Like I said, I've looked into some older forums and things like that to try and track this down, but it's everything about both of these sightings and reports are almost identical in their wording in every single forum post, which leads me to believe that it's potentially and most likely another urban legend of Walt Disney World. There was, I mean, obviously, of course, there's people do dump their ashes, dump family members' ashes in the ride. However, rides like Haunted Mansion, rides like Pirates, rides like just rides like that are they're closely monitored by security cameras. So when those things do happen, they actually shut down the ride. If they're caught on camera doing it by security, they'll actually shut the ride down, do a lights on evac of the ride. And then they'll shut the ride down until they get a hazmat crew inside the building to actually clean the building.
Huh.
So if it's caught, they'll actually shut the ride down, get everybody out of the ride, because that's a biohazard. And then they'll, you know, people think that they won't see it because it's, you know, oh, it's the Haunted Mansion, it's dark, it's dusty, it's dirty, but all the dust and dirt and darkness in the Haunted Mansion is controlled. So nothing in the Haunted Mansion is dirty that isn't supposed to be dirty. So if people actually do it, it gets cleaned up pretty quickly. Obviously it's not caught 100% of the time, but it's usually caught pretty quickly, because you can kind of tell when someone's being squirrely. So that's a interesting side fact about it. The Disneyland Haunted Mansion, I mentioned it earlier. There was an interesting security footage of what appeared to be someone walking on the pathway in front of the Haunted Mansion. And it looked very similar to, the cause looked to be very similar to what Bob said earlier, where it's a ghosted image from a previous recording on the tape. Because there's nothing about it that really screams that it was an actual ghost. But there aren't many tales of the Disneyland Haunted Mansion being haunted either. Which, again, I think, Bob, this brings up a really interesting kind of a question, because Disneyland was around longer. Disneyland had more of a direct connection to Walt, and in the construction and the subsequent time, there was a lot more energy exerted into these locations. Why do you think that there's more stories at the Disney World parks as opposed to Disneyland?
Disney World, I would argue, is probably a lot more visited than Disneyland, which would mean that there's probably more people coming and going throughout the day compared to land, leaving a lot more, you know, energy kind of behind. The construction of Disney World was a lot more finessed than Disneyland's are. I do have some stories about the construction prior to it, that the idea that Disney World is actually built on kind of sacred ground. So there's probably something to that as well, which I will get to in the sequel episode to this. There's a lot to the concept of why. I would say that most likely it's just because the sheer amount of people that go through there, and it being a lot more of a popular spot, and there's just, that's the reasoning behind it. I would say that it's a combination of all of those things.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. I mean, Disney World is definitely a more visited park, just due to size and capacity constraints. So that would make more sense. It's just always been something that's kind of been interesting to me, that there's more stories about, you know, Disney World, and even, you know, places, you know, parks like Animal Kingdom, which are relatively new parks, as opposed to Disneyland, which is the significantly older park.
All right, folks. So it's a good discussion. It's a good way to talk about things. And because of that, we have one more story each, just for the sanctity of time. It's probably the longest episode I think we've ever done on Bob After Dark, but there's just a sheer amount of stories that go into this. And because of that, Steve and I will revisit this topic again down the line of the why is it more haunted and things like that. We're going to answer those questions in a future episode. So Steve and I are going to share one more story each. I have a really easy one to kind of end things out, because the next time we talk, I have stories about actual deaths that have been recorded at Disney that may relate to a haunting. But this one's the mysterious story of Mr. One Way at Space Mountain. You ever hear of this one, Steve?
Yeah, that's a weird one.
So the idea of Mr. One Way is that if you ride Space Mountain and you have a, like, one particular, like, car next to you that's empty, or a spot next to you that's empty, some people have claimed that they've actually seen a ghostly image of a man with red hair that gets on the ride with you. And those pictures that take during the ride, they show this person, and then at the end there's actually no person. And the strange thing is, this has been a repeating story a lot over time, of this man who rides with you if you have nobody next to you, and at the end he's gone. And what's really strange is the fact that it's been seen multiple times. And the fact that it's called Mr. One Way is because he only is shown during the beginnings, not the ends.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I've heard rumors of it. I've heard the tales, but it's definitely an odd one, especially just because of the way that the ride onload and offload system is.
Absolutely. Steve, what's your last story?
My last story is actually about one of the resorts, and it's about the Contemporary Resort. Unfortunately, this is a bit of a downer. Multiple suicides have occurred at the resort, mainly from people who jump off the balconies to the parking lot. As a result, it's actually caused the park to change its operation protocols that allows the hotel maids to actually check in on people, even if they're requesting no room service. And the most recent suicide in that building was actually in March of this year.
Oh, man,
it wasn't a jumping death, but a woman was found dead in her room, and from suicide. So sadly it's a darker side of Disney, but it's something that occurs, unfortunately, quite frequently. But there have been reports from people that are staying in the Contemporary, and they're looking out their window and they just see somebody fall past their window. And they run outside scared, and there's no one outside. And no one has jumped, and no one has fallen. So that's definitely a very bizarre instance, and bizarre reports. Again, I haven't found any major documentations of or proof that people have seen these things, but because of the nature of all the trauma that has occurred in this building, I'd be hard pressed to say that it probably doesn't happen. I believe that it probably happens.
Absolutely. Steve, I want to thank you so much for coming on this episode. I know you wanted to come on here, and we have a lot more to talk about, but I realize the time, and we're going to be running into like that hour 45 mark, which is pretty long for what we normally put out.
You're welcome.
So why don't we pause there? Why don't we pause? We're going to put a pin in it. We're going to revisit this topic because I still have research to go through. Steve still has research to go through. And we'll come up with a sequel, and we're going to come up with a better conclusion to everything. Just, I want you guys to understand the sheer amount of legends and lore that go into Disney. It's not just spooky. I mean, there's things out there of people like ritualistic things like hidden paintbrushes that you would find and get a fast pass. It's stuff like that all throughout the parks that really build to an overarching story. And I think that just goes to show like what care and dedication go into that place. You know, some people may say, well, it's, you know, a money grab, but man, you got to think about it. The people that go in there on a day-to-day basis that make sure that park runs the way it does and whatnot, it doesn't surprise me why we have so many ghost stories associated with it, you know, because I think it's part of just the charm of the Disney parks.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, you know, Disney is, and I kind of started off with it. Disney's such a magical place and such a wholesome place. I think people want to find what the dark side of Disney really is.
All right, Steve, can you plug your stuff where people can find you, buy your merch, et cetera, et cetera?
Absolutely, I can. you can find me, you can buy my shirts at prowrestlingtees.com/ChicagoBearHug. For the love of God, please buy shirts. I'm on Cameo now. You can find Steve Michaels on Cameo. You pay me a couple bucks, I'll cut a promo, I'll wish you a happy birthday, you know, happy anniversary, tell your boss you hate him, whatever. And then I don't have any shows coming up, but you can watch Ohio Valley Wrestling, watch OVW every Friday night at midnight Eastern, 11 Central, on U2 America. And that's also streamed on the U2 America website. And you can also see it on the OVW Roku and Fire Stick app.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Steve. We've missed you on the show, and I'm happy to have you back, and we're excited for the world to start going back to normal so you can get back out on the road. But until you're back, we'll use you up for as much as we possibly can here.
Yeah, it's I've missed you man, and it's felt really good to be back home.
All right, folks, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this episode of Bob After Dark. No matter where you are in doing what you're doing, I just want to wish you guys sweet dreams. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you guys sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody, and remember the two most important rules of Bob After Dark. Not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Good night, everybody.
Memoriam Development.